All right, well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Wednesday study. We are continuing on through the book of Genesis, and tonight we find ourselves in chapter 44, and we will be really sort of, we've come to the climax of this story regarding Joseph and his brothers. So this is, in many ways, for at least for me anyway, it's the chapter I've been waiting for, you know, the one that where, you know, everyone is able to really see kind of what happened and what all this meant and how the Lord was involved in all of this. So let's open in prayer, and then we will we'll start to look at chapters 44 and 45 this evening. Heavenly Father, Lord, as we open your word this evening, we just pray that you would just be with us in this study, Lord. We pray that your Holy Spirit would be amongst us, Lord, that you truly would teach us through the hearing of your word and through the words that you give to me to speak this evening, Lord. And we've been so blessed by what we've been studying for the past few weeks, Lord, and we just ask, Lord, that tonight you would also show us some things, Lord, that would be a blessing to our lives. And we ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Well, last week we sort of left off in the story where Joseph's brothers, you know, they went up to Egypt the second time, and there was a big, you know, struggle in terms of getting their father to agree to send their youngest brother Benjamin with them to go buy food. But because of, you know, as we talked about, you know, because of the way that Joseph set all this up, you know, through the wisdom that the Lord gave to him, he really put him in a pressure cooker. He put him into a position where they really needed to do what they really didn't want to do, and that is to go back and buy more grain, but also to take the son that the father loved. And he finally decided to do that. He agreed to do it, and he just placed his trust in the Lord, which is what we all need to do, right? We talked about that you know, when we're in a tough situation, we can continue to try to figure it out on our own and on our own, with our own intellect and with our own power, own connections, whatever the case may be. But ultimately, you know, we as Christians, we who are believers, we who belong to Christ, and that's the life we live. It's a life of placing our trust in the Lord and looking to Him to lead and to guide us and to take care of us. Being confident that he truly is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And so they did go up, and they were able to successfully, you know, purchase the grain. They showed Joseph their youngest son, and they had a really nice meal. But along the way, they were just on edge, right? Because, you know, this guy, this man, they called him this man, Joseph, was so sort of unpredictable. And, but, you know, you're on pins and needles the whole time, but they were able to get through it. And so now we're at the point in the story where they're going to go ahead and go back. You know, they're going to get the purchase, the grain and everything, and they're all going to leave, you know, with Benjamin. So they're going to be feeling pretty good about everything and breathing a sigh of relief that everything is going well. But Joseph is not done with the tests that he is giving them. And as we said last time, you know, there are two principal things that he's really wanting to find out about his brothers. And one of them is, what is their attitude towards their youngest brother, Benjamin? So he knew about the attitude that they had concerning him, you know, that they were jealous of him, that they were very cruel and harsh to him, and everything else. But the question is, you know, have they changed? Are they different people? Are they still, are they treating his younger brother that way? And then the second one is also with regard to the father, like what, how are they treating the father? And also, you know, is the father still alive? And as we go through this, the one thing we just have to really bear in mind is Joseph has had a lot of time to think about all this stuff, you know, for 22 years. And you can just imagine that in the early stages of him being sold into slavery and everything, he probably had a lot of thoughts in his mind. Like, it was like, you know, he knew that his brothers, you know, treated him badly and everything, but deep down inside, he likely thought, you know, these are my brothers, you know, they have their faults, they have their idiosyncrasies, but deep down inside, he loved his family, he loved his brothers, and he thought, they, you know, even though they treat me harshly, they still love me, or they at least like me. But here, when they sold him into slavery, and he, you know, and he was in slavery, in prison, whatever, he had a lot of time to think about, like, what happened here? Like, why did they treat me this way? And do they really still hate me, or do they really hate me this much? And why hasn't anybody come to rescue me? Or, you know, how come my father, when he, you know, when they came back without me, like, how come, you know, no one ever came to get me, and all that kind of stuff. He's had a lot to think about. And I think about, like, sometimes when you have, like, a relationship with someone, you're really close to them, and then that relationship breaks up. You know, you have a breakup in the relationship. There's a period of time where you think about that person, and you think, like, God, I wonder, like, let's say that the other person, like, they're the ones who broke off a relationship or something. You'd be thinking, like, why did they do that? And do they still think about me? Like, I'm thinking about them. Do they still think about me? Do they care about me? What are they doing right now? You know, all those kinds of thoughts are going through your mind, you know, when you have that kind of situation. And so Joseph's had a lot of time to think about that. And so part of the test is to find out what they're really like now, and have they changed. But he also has, like, some questions, like, that he's wanting to answer, like, that he thought about, you know, all along, which is, you know, what were they thinking, or, you know, why did they treat me this way and stuff. And so anyway, I just wanted to lay that foundation and that backdrop. Because I think that's a thread that kind of runs through all of this. The other thing I'm just going to say at the outset that I would just say is an observation, and I'm going to say it at the outset because I don't want to forget to say this, and that is that one of the things that I see from this, we're going to see, I think we all know the story, right, of how it ends up, but one of the things that occurred to me is that we as human beings, we always want to know the answer as to why something is happening. You know, like when we go through trials or we can go through a good thing, we can go through a bad thing, no matter what it is. Especially, I think it's something for Christians, right? That, you know, as we, like, learn about God, we learn the scripture and stuff like that, we get a sense that there's a purpose and there's a reason why things happen in our lives. And one of the things that I observe from this and other places in the Word is that when you're going through something, it's difficult to really know why God is doing it. You can really, I would say that it's rare that we are going to know why we're going through something. But that doesn't stop us from trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? It's like you're going through something, like a terrible trial, and you're trying to think, oh, the Lord is doing this because of this, or the Lord is doing this because of this other thing. And but the reality is that you really don't know why you're going through these things. And that's why James, you know, in chapter 1 of James, he talks about how, you know, one thing, I mean, he does kind of describe why we go through these things, right? We go through these things because the Lord is trying to build something into our lives. That's something that we do know about going through different kinds of issues. But the other thing is that, you know, he says that we should pray for wisdom when we go through these things, because of the fact that we really don't, we don't know what's going on, and we need the Lord's guidance. But it's not until many times you get through the whole thing that you find out the story, the reason why, and that's what we're going to see here. And I would say that it's very much like what happened with Job. You remember with Job, you know, when he started to go through all those difficulties, he had his three friends there, and they're all talking about the reason why, like, oh, you know, this is happening to you because, you did something wrong. You know, that's been my experience, that if you do something wrong, that's when God punishes you. And, you know, and they're all making their own decisions. Even Job weighs in on why. But the reality is, you don't know. You don't know all the time, unless the Lord reveals it to you. So in any event, I just thought I wanted to kind of throw that out. All right, let's start, and let's look at Genesis chapter 44, beginning with verse 1. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money. So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. And so you see here that Joseph is doing a couple things. Number one is he wants to make provisions for them. So he's providing them with food, and he's loading them down as much as they can carry, and so forth. Again, he is giving them their money back, and so he's returning that money. But also here, he's going to put his cup into the mouth of the sack of Benjamin. Okay, so this is all part of this last series of tests that he's going to put his brothers through. Verse 3, it says, as soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away and their donkeys. When they had gone out from of the city and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, get up, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which the Lord drinks, and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing. And so here what he's doing is he's now going to tell his steward to go and catch up to him and to confront them and to basically accuse them of not only, you know, stealing the money that they put into the sack, but more importantly, stealing this cup that he is saying that Joseph, you know, practices divination with. And so this cup, like, what does that mean, a cup of divination? I mean, by and large, what that means is at this time period, pagans, I guess you would say, would use a cup to make decisions. So like they may put water or some liquid into the cup, and then they would put something else in there. Like they put oil, or they put, whatever they want to put in there, and swirl it around. And then either the person, you know, the leader, the decision maker would look into the cup, or he'd have his advisors look into the cup, and they would be able to look and see, oh, that's the shape of this, and that means this. And so, you know, if you're trying to make a decision, you know, should we attack this nation, or should we do this, should we do the other, they would be able to, you know, use that in some fashion to make a decision. And so that's really what he's saying. And we know that Joseph did not do this. He did not practice divination. He actually received inspiration and divine information directly from the Lord, and he was not a pagan person, but he was trying to put forward this test here. And so verse 6, it says, and so he, and that is the steward, overtook them, and he spoke to them these same words, and they said to him, "Why, my Lord, say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house?" And so here, after the steward accuses them, they're saying, like, they're probably thinking, "Oh my goodness, you know, we thought this was over, right? We should have known this was too good to be true." But in any event, they're basically going to try with logic to say, "Look, you know, why would we steal anything from Egypt or from Joseph or whatever? You know, think about it. When we left the first time, you returned our money, and we thought it was an error, and we brought it back to you. You know, we were honest, and we brought back the money. Why would we steal it back? It doesn't make any sense." You know, and so they try to appeal to him through logic in that way. But then they go on in verse 9 to say, "With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves." And so here they were so confident in their innocence that they said, "Look, whoever it is, that if you find it on any of us," because they're thinking, "There's no way you're going to find it, because we didn't steal, and we're not thieves, okay? And we have no reason to steal." They say, "Let him die, and we will also be your slaves." And so when I read this, I kind of circled this, put a box around it, and said, you know, these kinds of statements never seem to work out well. I mean, we've seen, I think, at least one earlier in Genesis where someone made a statement like that. I think it was Jacob with regard to Rachel. But I would just say, you know, as a thing of wisdom, we shouldn't make like these empty, like blind statements like this. It can only, I call it an unforced error, right? To just make this blanket statement, like, if you find it, you could kill me or kill whoever has it or whatever. So anyway, I think it's better. I think this is why Jesus said, you know, we should just let our yes be yes and our no be no. And in other words, we should be the kind of people that have the degree of integrity that we can just say yes or no without having to add anything to it or make a person or say more to make a person believe you. That's the kind of people that we ought to be, to have that kind of integrity. But in any event, they were really desiring to convince this steward that we did not have anything to do with this. They're basically, you know, trying to talk themselves out of a ticket, so to speak. And so then in verse 10, we see the steward really setting them up. He said, because he knows he's the one who put the cup in there. And he says, "Now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless." And so he basically, in making that statement, is really seeking to lock them in and to accept their offer. But he changes it a little bit. He doesn't say that that person should be killed, but rather that person would just be his slave. And then the ones who did not steal the cup, they can go free. And so he's like, you know, we don't need all this bloodshed and everything. I'll just take whoever it is as my slave, and then you guys can go. I'm only interested in finding out the person who did this wicked thing and punishing them. Verse 11, it says, "Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack." And so they were anxious to get this over with so that they can prove their innocence and be able to continue on where they're going. And so verse 12, it says, "So he, being the steward, searched, He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. And so he basically, started with the oldest and went to the youngest, you know, to build tension, right, and everything. And as they kept going, he finally got to Benjamin, and it was found there. And you can just imagine what kind of emotion that would have stirred up in them. And it, verse 13 really tells us what that was. It says, "Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city." Now this verse right here, verse 13, is very significant in two ways. One is that it really tells us very clearly what they felt. And the second reason why is because this verse demonstrates in a very big way that these men were different. Okay, so number one, they tore their clothes. And we know as Bible students that when someone in these times tore their clothes, that was a tremendous sign of mourning, because clothing was expensive, and usually people only had one change of clothes. And so when you tore your clothes, it was like you're saying that this is representative of my heart, that what you've just told me or what I've just experienced has just torn my heart in half. And so, you know, in terms of tests to try to understand where these men were, like what their attitude was concerning both their brother and their father, it was very clear where they stood right here, because this tore them to the core. I mean, it really shook them, because they did not want their brother Benjamin to be taken away, and they did not want their father to be they knew that this is going to kill their father, basically, and they did not want those consequences to occur. And so that's number one. But then the second thing that we see here is that is the last clause, and they return to the city. And the key there is that at this point, I mean, think about like what their attitude was concerning Joseph. Like, they didn't care about him at all. I mean, they really didn't care about him. They wanted to kill him. And, you know, they was like, I don't care. Kill him, sell him into slavery. I don't even care. And let me just sit down and have a meal. Like, their hearts were just hard. But look at what they did here. I mean, they could have just said, oh, you know, what a shame, right? They could have said to Benjamin, what a shame, or you know, too bad, Benji, right? Or, or they could have said, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do, right? You know, they could have just, you know, got on their donkeys, and they could have just kept going home, right? And they said, oh, we'll tell our father what happened. You know, we got the food, we got the grain. You know, we're good for now, or whatever. But they didn't. They decided that they're going. They're united with their brother. They were not considering themselves to be separate. This is something that happened to their brother, and they're going to go and they're going to deal with it with their brother. He is their brother, their real brother in their eyes. And so that is a very big, big change in their attitude. Verse 14, it says, "So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there, and they fell before him on the ground." And so we see that repeating theme, right, of the dream of Joseph being repeated, them falling before him on the ground. This time, they're really distressed. I mean, if they were nervous, if they were scared or whatever before, now they're in real distress. But this it's really interesting what takes place here. Verse 15, it says, "And Joseph said to them, 'What deed is this that you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination?' And so here he, you know, he confronts him in this way. And again, he's putting him to the test. And so he's pretending like he's that kind of person, right? He practices divination and he's dealing with them harshly here. And look, we see, look at, we're going to see Judah step up to the plate. He is going to be true to what he said to his father in terms of being a surety to his brother. And he's clearly acting, in an intercessory way. Like he's interceding here, and he's doing something that's very noble. And what he does, Joseph's going to know once and for all that they are changed men here because of this. So verse 16, then Judah says, "What shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found." What's interesting is that he really knew that, I think he probably felt that he was innocent and that the brothers were innocent, but, he's looking at it and saying, well, I don't know, maybe Benjamin did do this, but, if he did it, it doesn't matter. He's our brother, and we are going to stand with him as brothers. And we can see that in the last part there where it says, "Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found." And here they, as I said before, they passed the test. They would not separate themselves from their brother. Verse 17, it says, "But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father." And so here we see that Joseph is not going to just sort of be satisfied with their initial statement. He's going to give them even another chance. Like he's giving them many opportunities to abandon Benjamin. So he says like, "Oh no, far be it from me. I don't want to punish anyone who didn't do anything wrong. I just want to punish the one who stole this cup. So you guys can go. Just I'm just going to hold on to Benjamin, the youngest son here, who did this terrible thing." And so when that happens, then now we see, despite getting all of these chances, right, to escape from this, they had the chance when the steward told them, and they're getting this other chance here to leave. But now Judah, he steps up to the plate big time here, and because he's like going, "This is not going to happen." In his mind, he's saying, "This will not happen. I will not leave Benjamin here. I need to talk. We need to talk." And it's amazing because it would be a fearful thing to be contradicting this very powerful man, but he was, this is what you call being, the path of least resistance. The pain of seeing what would happen with his father, is too great it doesn't matter what Joseph's saying. Joseph could say, "I'm going to kill you right now. I'm going to chop your head off," whatever. He's got to have this word, and he's going to have to try to deal with this, because not only did he promise his father that he would be a surety, but again, he does not want to have his father go through this once again. So here Judah then, he comes near to Joseph and he says, "Oh my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked my servant, saying, 'Have you a father or a brother?' And we said to my Lord, 'We have a father, and an old man, and a child of his old age who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him.' Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your younger brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face anymore. So it was when we went up to your servant, my father, that we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go back, buy us a little food. But we said, we cannot go down. If our younger brother is, we cannot go down. If our younger brother is with us, then we will go down, for we may not see the man's face unless our younger brother is with you. So he basically just relayed the whole story. Like, and it's interesting, when I was reading this, I was thinking about like negotiation, you know, and I remember Alan Ulibarri telling me that he went to a negotiation class one time, and he said that one of the things that they taught him in terms of being an effective negotiator is that, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, tell the other party that you're negotiating with, you have to reveal information, you got to reveal facts that are, you know, that are driving, you know, your decision to enter into the agreement or your decision to want to change certain elements. And I've actually applied that in negotiating contracts, and it is really effective. And so in a way, that's what Joseph's doing here. I mean, what Judah's doing is he's telling him all, you know, the facts that are relevant here to help in convincing Joseph to agree and to be reasonable and merciful here. So he's giving him the backstory here. Verse 27, it says, then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons, and the young one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. But if you take this one also from me, and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. So now he really gets the full story. And in part of him telling about this part, Joseph finds out an answer to something he was probably wondering, which I alluded to earlier, is that, you know, I'm sure it crossed his mind at least one time, right? That when he was gone, you know, he's probably thinking, how could I disappear for 22 years and nobody would ever like come, like the father wouldn't send anybody to look for me or to come for me or whatever. And he realizes that his father believed that he was dead. And so that was a big deal for him to hear that. Verse 30, it says, now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen when he sees the lad is not with us that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. And so now he's really letting him know that essentially, if this happens, if this goes down the way that you're saying that it is, this is going to kill my father, and I cannot do that. And so it you know, becomes that's a forceful statement that he's making here. And then verse 32, for your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see that evil, I mean, the evil that would come upon my father. And so, you know, he really lays it out, the fact that he agreed to be the surety, you know, for his brother. And the other thing is here is that, you know, he's really communicating another thing to Joseph, and that is that he knows that his father favors Benjamin, his son here, and he knows that if Judah goes back without Benjamin, his father will die. It'll kill him, basically. But if the reverse is true, if Benjamin goes back without Judah, it's not going to kill his father, okay? And so he understands that, and he is okay with it. There's no jealousy anymore. He just understands that's the way it is, and he's not jealous. So through all of this, Joseph is learning a lot. He's learning a lot in terms of how these men have really changed here. And we're going to see how this affects Joseph. So chapter 45, verse 1, it says, then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried out, make everyone go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And so, here we see Joseph, he's just overwhelmed. He's overcome with emotion. You know, these 22 years, right? He's had a lot of thinking, as I mentioned before, and he's had a lot of feelings and everything. And now all of those things are coming to the surface. And verse 2, it says, and he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. And so here we see this grown man, right, this powerful man, he's weeping aloud, so loudly that the house of Pharaoh, those ones, his servants that he put out, they could hear him wherever they were, you know, outside of that room. And so this is he's reached his full breaking point here. He's weeping aloud. And he's just overcome with emotion. And so his brothers are probably looking at him. They're stunned, right? They're like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Now what's happening? You know, it's like, this is all very, weird to them. You know, I'm sure that, you know, they're just perplexed by all that's going on here. And then Joseph drops the bomb on them here, right? Verse 3, it says, then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer, for they were dismayed in his presence. So here we see Joseph finally, after he's put him through all the tests he wanted to put him through, he's overcome with emotion, and he says, now is the time to reveal myself to my brothers. And here it says that he says to his brothers, and I would think that he likely now, you know, before, remember in the prior chapter, it talked about how he was talking to them using interpreters, right? So they didn't know that he was their brother. And he also didn't know, like, when they were talking, doing a sidebar, they didn't know that he understood Hebrew and what they were saying and what they were thinking and stuff. But here he's talking directly to them without an interpreter. And so, wow, they're stunned. And we can see what's foremost in his mind is my father alive? You know, all this stuff, like, I mean, he kind of believes him, right? Because, you know, they were distressed or whatever, but he also knows that in the past they've not been entirely honest with him. But he is really, like, he had these two things that he wanted, he was really concerned about. One is his brother alive and everything else, but the other part is my father alive? I mean, he really wants to know, because he just wants to be able to know that he can see his father. So he's asking them that question. But it says here, his brothers could not answer. They were stunned. They were not only stunned, but they were afraid of the situation. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, because, you know, they're also afraid because they remember, we sold this guy into slavery, you know, and he's in this powerful position. So all these things are going through their mind. It's like, what's going to happen to us? And, you know, it's kind of a good thing, kind of a bad thing, you know, what's going on? And then verse 4, it says, and Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. And so, the first thing is whenever, you know, someone is bringing you close like that, you know, that is, that's usually a good thing, right? It's, you know, if you don't like somebody or you hate somebody, you would want to, you know, keep them away. Like if, or even if you were considering yourself to be at a higher level of authority as somebody or in a different class as somebody, you would have them away, right? But he's saying, come near to me. You know, he's saying, you're my brothers and I still see you that way. And you know, you don't need to be afraid. But the other thing is that he, in this statement, he says, whom you sold into Egypt, which is that he is communicating to them facts that only Joseph would know about, right? Because they did this this evil thing, right? And it was just them, and I guess the ones who he sold them into slavery would know, but the fact that he says, whom you sold into Egypt, now they go, this is really our brother. Because he looked different, right? We know that, you know, he was dressed and he looked like an Egyptian, right? Egyptians would shave their head, they wear makeup and all kinds of things like that. And so he didn't look like a Hebrew, like who they would wear beards and long hair and stuff. And so, but when he said that, now they really know. But look at what he does here in verse 5 that's so amazing. He says, but now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. And so here, he is really concerned. He knows what's going on in their minds, the fear, the guilt, and everything else. And so in a way, it's almost like he's being, he's caring more about them than he is about himself right now. He's saying, you know, don't be angry with yourselves. You know, I want you guys to be at peace here. And this is something, I mean, you look at this and that is the attitude that we should have, right, when we are forgiving someone. And you know, we talk about, I've talked a lot about Joseph being a type of Christ, but this is how Christ is too, right? In forgiving us is that he forgives us and he wants us not to be grieved or angry with ourselves. He wants us to have peace and he wants us to have joy. He wants us to have abundant life. And so, but again, as I said, you know, we being Christians, right, being Christ-like, when we forgive people, you know, people talk about like, I'll forgive them, but I won't ever forget or whatever, you know. But, you know, this is the kind of grace. I mean, this is like just grace personified, right, that not only am I going to forgive you, but I am going to, I want you to not worry about it or feel grieved about it or feel angry about what you've done. And he says, and because a big part of that, he says those words for God, right? God did this. God sent me here to preserve life, right? And so we now see the big picture, right? So like I said, you may not know while you're going through it. You know, when he was sitting in jail or when he was a slave, he didn't know why all this happened, but it became clear to him, you know, as this all was unfolding, God did this. He sent me ahead to preserve life. And so, you know, as I said, he didn't have that verse, you know, all things work together for good to them who love God and who are called according to his purpose. But his life really was a picture of that. But the key thing in that particular verse is it's not to say that all things that happen to you are good, but it's that God works all these things for good. He has a way of taking these things and making them work out for good. And so Joseph is seeing that. And in verse 6, he goes on to further discuss that. He says, for these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, And there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. Verse 7, and God, right? The focus is on God. He sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Verse 8, so it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. And so even though you guys were the ones who actually sold me into slavery, you were the instrument that was used, I know now that it was not really you who was doing that. It was God who orchestrated all of this. And so that's the attitude that Joseph has here, and he wants them to know that so that they would not be grieved or angry. And he goes on to say that, and essentially, God is the one who, you know, after the fullness of time, put me in this powerful position so that I would be able to, he orchestrated all of it so that I would be able to be the one to rescue and to deliver the family in this way. And he says that he made me a father to Pharaoh. It's like, what does that mean? What it really means is that he put him in a position where Pharaoh listened to Joseph like a son listens to his father, basically. And so he says, only, you know, in a way it's like, you know, that's an amazing thing for Pharaoh, right? The at this time, probably the most powerful man on planet Earth, God made Pharaoh look to Joseph like a son looks to a father. Only the Lord could have done that. And he made him not only a lord of all of his house, but a ruler throughout all of the land of Egypt. Verse 9, so he says, hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. So now he wants to get them, he says, we got to get this going because, like I said, he hasn't seen his father. He knows his father is old. He wants them to go ahead and get his father and bring him. You know, he doesn't want them to waste any time. Verse 10, he says, you shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children and your children's children, your flocks and herds and all that you have. And so he's identifying a particular part of Egypt that he says there's this perfect place, you know, that you're going to be able to come and live in, and you'll be able to live the way you guys live out, you know, with your livestock and everything. It's going to be perfect. He starts to give him the vision here. Verse 11, there I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Verse 14, then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. And so here he does what he's been longing to do. Like, remember when they came the last time, he was longing to reach out and hug his brother Benjamin and so forth. And so he does so. And the other thing is that it says here he kisses all of his brothers, and that really is a demonstration that he truly has forgiven them. You wouldn't be that close or that intimate with someone if you were still holding a grudge, you know. And the other thing about it too is that he not only was demonstrating that you know, he wasn't holding a grudge, but he wasn't treating them differently than Benjamin, in a sense, right? Because, you know, he kissed them, and so it's not like he went and he hugged his brother Benjamin and just said, okay, guys, go ahead and go back. You know, he was really not only speaking words to them, to give them a sense that he had forgiven them, but he also proved it and demonstrated it by his actions. If you don't like somebody, the first thing is he would be like his brothers were before. Remember, the brothers couldn't even speak to him in a kind manner. They always spoke with him roughly. And so here we see him speaking to them in a kind way. But the other part is, you don't like somebody, you don't want to be around them, you don't want to touch them, you don't want them to touch you or whatever. But this is a full-blown forgiveness. And then it says afterwards, his brothers talk with him. So just imagine, I mean, they're just like, probably had all kinds of questions like, well, what's going on? You know, what's their father, like? And is he still healthy? Can he still walk? Da, 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 da. You know, how many children do you guys have and what's going on and all that, just, they're able to just kind of catch up with each other here. Verse 16, now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house saying, Joseph's brothers have come. So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households and come near to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt and you shall eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded, do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives, bring your father and come. And so it was one of those things where it's like, If you're a family of Joseph, you're a friend of Joseph or whatever, you're good with me. He was like, don't worry. So it was not just that Joseph was okay with all of this, but Pharaoh was as well. And there is a thread. I mean, I haven't talked as much about the type of Christ, but think about what's going on here, the brothers and stuff like that. I think about how Israel, all the Jews rejected Christ, right? And they killed him. But then there's going to come a time when the Lord is going to redeem that remnant of Israel. And so, and at that point in time, they're going to realize, they're going to look at the one whom they pierced, and they're going to feel guilty about that, and they're going to weep about that, but the Lord is going to comfort them just like he is here. But the other thing you can say about this is that if Joseph is a type of Christ, and we've said before that Pharaoh is a type of the Father, you can see here that it's kind of like whenever you look at the epistles of Paul, and it says it'll say, bless, it'll say grace and peace from Jesus Christ and the Father, and I've always said when we read that, I didn't quote that perfectly, but the point is that Paul, he provides this greeting of grace and peace that he is communicating to the church from both the Father and from the Son. And I've always said that it's really a way of saying that, some people could say, Jesus is so, he's nice and he's meek and he's mild and everything else. And, he's okay with everything, and he's forgiven you and he wants you to have peace. But the Father is angry, he's on the throne and he's still upset about your sins. But the grace and the peace, they're unified in that. They're unified in the forgiveness. They're unified in the grace and everything. And the same here where we have the Pharaoh is saying, oh yeah, sure, don't worry, come, go down and get your father, bring him back, we're going to put you in the land, we'll give you the best of everything. And then verse 20, it says, also do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. And so in a way, they're just saying, don't worry about packing, don't worry about, getting any of your stuff and the things that you think are the best. Everything we have is the best of everything here, everything to worry about. Verse 21, then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And so this is a big deal, right, because we already talked about how changes of garments are very expensive during this time, and so the fact that he was able to, that he did that, he's giving them just a token, right, of what, how he's going to bless them. And I can't help but think about, when I read this, how the Lord, He gives us, right, a down payment, right? When we become Christians, he gives us the Holy Spirit, right, as the down payment of what he is going to ultimately give us in the fullness of time. And so in a way, this is similar, right? He's giving them, he's going to give them all these things as tokens, and to give them a sign of you know, good faith, right, as to what he's going to do for them. And it says, and he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread and food for his father for the journey. And so he sent his brothers away, and they departed. And he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. So there's a couple of things going on here. Number one is that Joseph knows that when they go back and they tell their father what happened and everything, he's going to have a tendency to not believe them because they've lied in the past, right? And so he's going to give them all these tokens and everything so that his father's going to say, oh, you know, I think I believe him, because how would they have all these donkeys and all this other stuff, you know, all these goods? But the second part is when he says that do not, you know, see to it that you don't become troubled, he knows that right now they're feeling good. He said, you know, he comforted them. Don't grieve. Don't be sad and all that stuff. But as they start going back, they're going to start thinking like, oh man, they're going to start feeling guilty. They probably will fight with each other. See, I told you that we shouldn't have sold them into slavery. We shouldn't have harmed them. What, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And the other part is that they know as they're going back, they got to tell their father the truth. Because before they told them a lie and they had him believe that lie for 22 years, and now they have to face up to him. And so he's saying, like, don't let yourself, you know, be troubled by all these things. You know, it's what he's telling them there. Verse 25, then they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still, because he did not believe them. So he was just stunned. Just like they were stunned, he was, you know, doubly stunned. It's almost like his heart, it's saying his heart stopped. He was just like, I can't believe this. All these years, I thought that he was dead, and now they're telling me this. I can't believe this, basically. And then verse 27, it says, but when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph sent to carry them, the spirit of Jacob, their father, was revived. And then all of a sudden, you know, he became excited about it, right? And verse 28, it says, then Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So everything that you've told me, I'm convinced. I'm convinced by what I see and all of the carts and everything else. And I'm going to go and see him before I die. So what an amazing thing, huh, that has taken place here. And, you know, that Joseph was just, he's an amazing person, you know, and there's a big part of all of this has to do with just the character of the man that God chose to carry all this out, you know, because, you know, many people would be, you know, holding grudges and all of this, but the Lord not only orchestrated all these events to how they would happen this way, but he also orchestrated Joseph's life and the way that, even from the beginning, and how his father poured into him as a young child and through all these different things that happened to him, he just became the Lord just, you know, prepared him for the thing that he would the position that he would be in, you know, not only in terms of having the wisdom to make all these decisions and everything else, but just having the heart that would be necessary to carry this out the way the Lord wanted it to be carried out, to spare these men's lives and to bring them back to Egypt where the Lord can carry out his plan of growing the family of Israel. So In any event, that's our study for the night. We'll stop right here, and we will pick up this story where we left off next week.